Life writes itself, oh so unexpectedly. Podcasts write themselves. Generally speaking, my podcast is a reflection of my life. It's pure narcissism. But if I tell it in just the right way, maybe there's a little something interwoven in there for all of you. Maybe there's a little humor, a little magic, a little tragic. Ooh, man, I just got a disturbing phone call from an old friend who was married to another old friend of mine. She calls me up. She sounds clearly intoxicated. She tells me she loves me. She tells me she almost dodged a... No, she tells me she thinks she dodged a bullet with her ex, who I knew very well. And I said, well, what do you mean? She goes, well, you can't repeat this. I said, okay. That guy used to watch something. And she went on, started to say something else. And I said, whoa. Reverse that. You said he used to watch something. I mean, I knew this guy was a little bit of a pervert. I was like, what flashed in my mind, maybe I'm reading your mind, or maybe it's just obvious for the thing that you wouldn't tell me and what it might be. I said, was he watching child porn? And she goes, yeah. And then she tries to go on with something else. I said, wait. Are we talking little kids? Or are we talking young girls, you know, teenagers or whatever, underage? Because she says 4 years old. She says 4 years old. So this guy that I knew fairly well used to watch fucking this type of shit the whole time I was hanging out with him. I had no fucking idea. And Jesus, this guy has turned out to be a fucking wreck. God damn. Anyway, this is the Shit Show with J-Bo. How the hell are all of you? Sorry to open up the podcast here with such a sordid tale. And it's probably not even that interesting, other than I just got off the phone and it was kind of shocking to me. Men don't age very well often. I think it's really good when men settle down with women who are good and children. It really keeps that testosterone, like, it keeps it moist, it keeps it fresh, but it doesn't let it get, like, dried out and fucking rancid and really fucked up. I think a lot of dudes, if they go past a certain age or they get divorced or they're left to their own devices, I mean, it's fucked up shit. It's porn. It's fast food. It's whatever you can get your hands on. It's strip clubs. It's hookers. Man, that's House of the Rising Sun type shit. And it will ruin a poor boy and an old boy quicker than you can imagine. It's an addiction. It's a vice. And Jesus, wouldn't it be better if we could just all clear ourselves of that nonsense and be pure? I mean, do you guys ever think about that? That one day you're going to be that disciplined person who eats right, who exercises right, who reads the right books, who reads it all, you know, anything other than quick quips on your cell phone or a magazine or something like that, you know, books. Man, I don't know if it's my eyes or if it's my lack of attention span. Yeah. But I have a real hard time getting through any book that I'm not kind of stoked on, which basically means like a Beatles biography or like a Nirvana biography or like a book about my favorite bands. Like, I have a hard time getting through. I'm not proud of that. you know, in my other life, in my future life, I would like to kind of not ever look at a screen again and be totally confident. And I would like to be totally pure in thought when it comes to my girlfriend and other women. And I'd like to be able to read and sit down and eat really classy, rustic food that doesn't contain a whole lot of carbohydrates and processed sugars. Because diabetes is a bitch. I mean, diabetes is awful. You realize, like, diabetes, they'll cut your fucking limbs off. You go blind. The nerves in your hands are numb. The nerves in your feet are numb. The nerves in your anus are numb. And you can't tell when you have to take a shit. So, not only do pregnant women always shit, supposedly when they have a baby, which blew my fucking mind, but diabetics oftentimes have to wear diapers. The price of insulin is insane. I'm not a diabetic, by the way. I just know one. And in the early 80s, the government told us that we need to eat more sugar. We need to eat more carbohydrates, more pasta. Lay off the fat. But that led to a whole bunch of problems, a whole bunch more problems than a bunch of fat would have led to. Maybe the problem is that they called it fat. Because nobody wants to be fat. So why would somebody want to eat fat? Maybe that's part of the conspiracy. Maybe whoever said that sugar was better than fat also named it fat. Things that make me go, Do you guys remember that show by Arsenio Hall? It was called The Arsenio Hall Show. Wow. It was a great show. I loved Arsenio Hall. He had big old teeth and big old hands. And he was in Coming to America, which is one of my favorite comedies of all time. So great. The royal penis is clean. You know, just so many classic one-liners. McDowell's, fake McDonald's, Soul Glow. Sexual chocolate. Lessons about gold digging, bitches. Anyway, how is everybody out there? I'm okay. It's been a couple weeks, man, but I wanted to deliver a podcast this week, and I want to deliver a podcast next week. And I will fulfill what I said that I would do a year straight. Well, I can't fulfill that because obviously my mom died, and I just got rattled and then got lazy and whatever, just couldn't focus or something. But then I actually had a couple podcasts ready for you guys, literally two of them. But something happened with my computer and they fucking disappeared. And I don't know if I'll ever find them, but if I do, I will put them out. And if I don't, I will just re-record it with the guy who's Mike. Mike, if you're listening, I'm really sorry. I don't know what the fuck happened. I'm going to try to find these files. I've already spent $90 to find the two files talking about the glorious end to your unbelievable trek of 2,400 miles up the Appalachian Trail. He was so stoked. I was so disappointed. I had them edited and I was ready to send them out. And my hard drive was full. I like shut off my computer. I thought I saved them and I came back and they were fucking gone. It was really weird. There was no audio in the tracks, but I'm still looking. So maybe I'll find them. I went to a wedding last weekend and I played a show at the wedding with my cousin, me and my cousin Davey. When I tell people I play with my cousin, I don't know what they think. Maybe they just think it's cute or stupid or non-consequential, but I actually take it pretty seriously. I mean, to me, the music I make with my cousin Dave and my cousin Vince is pretty much as important as any music I've ever made, which isn't saying that much, I suppose, because I don't know how important my music is. But to me, anyway, we played at this wedding, and the craziest thing happened. Apparently, the groom was having anxiety attack, right? And I'm sorry, he has anxiety, and I had no idea about this. Nobody knew. And so I wonder why I wasn't invited to the wedding, aside from, like, I'm not super close with my cousin who's getting married. But only a few people were invited. But then I asked my grandmother how it was afterwards. I try not to give anybody too much shit, like, as far as not being invited. It was my cousin. You know, I've seen perfect, complete strangers get married, and nobody gave a shit. But my own cousin, not that I wanted to go. That's the funny thing, but I guess I just wanted to be invited. She did not invite me. Very few people were invited. But I guess when they got there, the groom couldn't even get out of bed. His anxiety was so bad that he couldn't get out of bed. And my grandmother started crying. And my aunt started crying, you know, the bride's mother. And I didn't find out about this till I went to the reception, which I was supposed to play. And I get there, and the bride or the groom are nowhere to be found. There's family, about 40 people there. And I hear that the groom never showed up. He's at the hotel. He will not be coming today, and the bride probably won't be coming either. My aunt and uncle spent about $3,000 on this wedding. As my brother said, the veil of normalcy was lifted at that point. And yeah, so I don't know. And on one hand, I want to be angry at the guy. I guess whatever, man. It could go either way with me. If I feel like being angry and feeding into that seven deadly sin of wrath and satisfying that part of my soul by railing against somebody that I don't even know and just talking shit, which is a big character flaw for me. On one hand, I go, if you knew this was a possibility, that this was going to happen, you had anxiety, just go elope or possibly do a small ceremony, don't have a big-ass reception, and take the money and go to somewhere that doesn't have big crowds that you can handle. Just go out in the woods somewhere, but spend money on it. You know, go on some camping trip, some fucking safari or some shit like that. On the other hand, I just really don't give a shit. Well, it happens, I guess. And if they're married, well, there you go. Just more weirdness to add to my pile of weird thoughts about these people, I suppose. That was strange. It was a pretty big weekend last weekend. I was really tired. I've been really tired lately. I work 4 10-hour shifts now instead of 5 8s. And the days off are great because I can actually be myself and get away and have one day, you know, just with nothing to do, and then a regular weekend aside from that. But the 10 hours, like today, I actually worked more than 10 hours. I drove 2 hours to get to work. I get up at 3:45, got here by 6, and I worked from 6 to 5:30 without a break. I had 2 15-minute breaks, and I was repopulating the room, the cannabis that I grow, with 476 plants. Fucking crazy. My last room, my last grow that I did was 411 plants, and it was a lot of work. This is like, you know, it's a lot more anyway. And some of the strains have a lot of leaves on them. Oh my God. Anyway, it's good though. I'm trying to grow 300 pounds of dried pot. Do you know how much money on the street 300 pounds is of pot? I don't know, but it's probably well over $1 million. And I'm responsible. Kind of, you know, there are bosses that if I totally fucked something up, they would step in. Like one time I was, what do they call it? The middle person between, I was in a kitchen somewhere. It's a really nice place in Seattle called the Icon Grill. I really liked it. A great place. And I was the I wasn't the food runner. I was the, I don't know, you sit there and you put together the orders and you give them to the servers or you take them out to the table. It's kind of a hard job. And there was a term that you would hear occasionally thrown up around in the restaurant industry called going down. And I don't mean the slutty waitresses going down or the slutty dudes, I suppose, going down on some muff. You know, that probably is less rare or more rare than the opposite counterpart. But I went down, and that means you just kind of lose it, and you don't recover, and you can't recover. So it was like a Thursday or Friday night. The steaks started piling up in the window. Expediter. That's the term I was looking for. I was an expediter. They start piling up in the window, and I'm looking at the stakes, and they're piling up, and I'm looking at the stakes, and they're piling up. And I'm kind of smiling to myself, thinking, I've got this. It's no problem. I've certainly got this. Yeah, look at those stakes. They're just piling up. And I'm watching them, and they're piling up, and they're all different fucking temperatures, and they're dying in the window, and I'm just like, I got this. The cooks are looking at me. They're like, dude, these steaks are dying. I go, no worries. I got this, but I'm still just standing right there, just staring. And then I look to my right, and there's one of my coworkers, a seasoned coworker, staring at me in disbelief, like I'm staring at the steaks. And I can tell by the look in his eye that he sees the look in my eye, and he knows I've gone down, and I cannot recover. So the really super hot 24-year-old general manager who I had an affair with, and yes, we had sex about 4 times, and then she dumped me. I tried to buy her flowers and win her back. It was so ridiculous. I should just count my lucky stars and walked on. But anyway, she came and she saved my ass. She took all those steaks out. I think she told me to clock out, and I never worked that shift again. So I went down. But I'm not going to go down in the cannabis industry. It's a much different ballgame. Everything's much more slow moving. I mean, you're literally watching plants grow. People congratulate me all the time on what a nice grow I did, or man, that's a good room, or man, a lot of weight in that room, boy. Woo! You'll definitely get your bonus. And I go, thanks. But the reality is I'm just guiding them into the trellis, which is the netting, and I'm making sure the nutrients are straight and adjusting the lights as needed, and the plants grow themselves. It's really a miracle because within a couple weeks, they go from like 8-inch plants that look like shit, like spindly pieces of shit, into 3 weeks later, you see the buds start to form. 2 weeks later, the buds are as big as a shotgun shell. 2 weeks after that, they're as big as a small hand grenade. And that's kind of where they stay. They don't get much bigger than that. That's in about 7 weeks. But then you flush them. You put a bunch of water through them. You flush all the chemical, all the nutrient. Let's call it nutrient. You flush it out of the bud, but the water permeates all the cells. And each little cell gets bigger, and thus you come back one day and the buds are even bigger than you thought. And it's unbelievable. And you think about, damn, if I was in high school, I'd be freaking the fuck out right now. Because that's all we ever talked about was bud. The joints we would roll. And here I am, an adult, getting up at 3:45 to go grow pot. I don't even smoke pot. It bothers me to the extent where I can't smoke it. Although the industry is filled with a lot of potheads. You know, for real. A lot of people smoke a lot of weed at that place. I'm just not one of them. Huh. And I seem to be working a little bit faster and a little bit harder than everybody else. Maybe that's why, but I don't know. And if you guys are listening, you know, this is just fodder for the podcast. You're all great. You all are very knowledgeable. And I'm getting there. Anyway. So that's my job. Everybody out there, let's just break down the fucking fourth wall here. Do you guys like your jobs? Is it something you could do for a while? Do you feel like slaves? Do you feel like I could have been something else, but I'm doing this instead? Or do you feel like this is what I wanted and I'm really fucking happy? I'm curious. What you guys think? I'll give you a second to contemplate your place in life. All right. Well, I hope you feel good about where you're at. I feel okay where I'm at. it's not the dream, but it's not far from ideal, you know? It's not bad. I'm going to see the Black Keys and Modest Mouse in a couple weeks. It's pretty crazy because I've literally watched both those bands come up from, like, tiny bands that nobody had heard of, really. Modest Mouse more than the Black Keys. I got into the Black Keys, like their second record, Thick Freakness. My stepdad asked me about them because his cousin, whose name is Chuck, his son is the Black Keys singer. And I had heard of the Black Keys when my stepdad brought it up many years ago, 2003 or 4 or something like that. I'd heard about them in The Stranger. And that stranger said, you know, move over White Stripes. These guys are more gritty and more soulful than you'll ever be or something. You know, of course, 4 years later, I'm sitting in a diner with the Black Keys and they're reading The Stranger and they're super depressed that The Stranger hates them now. Because, you know, The Stranger had moved on to something more underground and evidently totally forgot what they had said about the Black Keys, or maybe they thought they changed. I mean, I do think the Black Keys sold out. I don't think that matters. I don't give a shit. I don't think it's a terrible thing. I mean, my favorite band of all time, the Beatles, were the biggest sellouts, or Kiss, you know. The fact is the Black Keys have, like, generational money now, you know. And I don't know, ultimately when, honestly, like when their great-great-grandchildren are like well off and they change the course of their entire family, hopefully, like to be rich people, I guess. Not that that's a hopeful thing, but, you know, it's nice to have money, I suppose, and it's pretty crazy. It all would have been worth it, you know, some indie people saying that the Black Keys sold out, you know. They got more commercial, they hired a producer who helped write the songs, they got haircuts, you know. But who gives a shit, right? That's fine. I don't really care. I'm beyond it. I mean, do you guys care? Does it matter that they sold their songs to a bunch of commercials? I guess not that I care or don't care. I don't know. I'm talking about it, but it just doesn't enter my mind. If I like the song, I like the song, you know? Anyway, I'm going to see them in Modest Mouse. And the first time I saw Modest Mouse, I had never heard them at all. But I liked the name, and they were a local Seattle band. And it was at a joint called the Velvet Elvis. And it was an amazing show. It blew my fucking mind. The rhythm that was coming off that band, I remember thinking, it was just the coolest fucking thing I'd ever heard, you know? I mean, Modest Mouse, when they came out, they were a force to be reckoned with. I mean, they've had their day, I think, and their last record was kind of mature, you know, and a couple of the songs were kind of slow. They definitely don't have that. They're more of a grand orchestrated band as opposed to like a herky-jerky fucking spastic insane band. But, sorry, let me have a couple peanuts here. Oh, yeah. Hold on. So Modest Mouse, yeah, I got to see them a whole bunch after that first time at the Velvet Elvis. And I watched them, you know, and I was just one of the kids who loved them. I tried to imitate Isaac Brock's guitar playing. He used to do this bendy thing that he doesn't really do anymore. But it was fucking magical. You know, compared to the people I grew up with who were like, he wasn't a blues guitarist or anything, but he was just noisy and very experimental, and like hyper passionate. He had this piece of shit guitar that was like called a Marlboro guitar or something. It was like a wannabe butt rock guitar. And it had this like tremolo system, which means you can kind of, you can bend strings, you know. But he didn't have a whammy bar. He just used the palm of his hand. And it was just so amazing. Like, he would step on this fucking like distortion pedal while the band was playing this disco groove and just be like, it's like sparks were shooting off his fucking guitar. It was unbelievable. So inspiring. And they inspired that entire city. And before you knew it, you know, they, a couple years later, they're headlining, you know, the Paramount in Seattle, and they're on the radio and stuff. And it was amazing to watch. But anyway, these two bands are playing together that I kind of have a personal history with, you know, and I got to open for Modest Mouse and shit like that. And Eric Judy from Modest Mouse played my band at some point. And just, it's going to be a great show. There's no way I won't fucking go. I just got to try to get on the list. So that's usually not a problem. I'll probably hit up Danny from the Black Keys first. And if he balks, maybe I'll hit up Jeremiah Green from Modest Mouse. I don't know. Those are my two connections. Anyway, don't mean to name drop, but it is kind of cool. They're coming to the PPG Arena, which holds, you know, 12,000, 14,000. Who knows? I don't know how much of the arena will be open that night, but it's certainly much larger than either time I saw those bands the first time. I mean, I was the roadie for the Black Keys at some record store called Jackpot in Portland, and there was like 10 people there, you know? And they asked me and my buddy to stay, so we'd come. They wanted us to come see them that night. And we were like, we might go to the coast and go win some money. So we went to the coast, you know. My buddy Eric always tells me, he's like, what if we would have went to see the Black Keys that night, man? Maybe we'd be part of the road crew or something. Maybe, dude. But I think I know the Black Keys a little bit better, and they're very gracious with letting us in, but I don't think we would have become part of their crew. But I guess you never know. But I don't want to be a crew person for the Black Keys. You know, I want to make my own music. Shit. Even if it goes nowhere, right? Shit. So, I did a recording project. The same one I've been working on. I recorded three more drum tracks and some guitar. Some guitar. For this project I've been working on, and at this point, the best name we have is the for the project is the Trans Situationists, or the Skin Me a Deer Boys. Or my cousin had some idea. It was like a Rick and Morty reference that said, like, the cousins who aren't really cousins or something like that. I don't even know about Rick and Morty, so that might be funny to you know, a Rick and Morty fan. He cracked up. But we went down to Youngstown, Ohio, and I spent 11 hours. Man, these 11-hour days, just that's a fucking bad number, 11 hours. It's a long time to work. Did an 11-hour recording session. And, you know, when I do those things, it's just like I walk out of there and I feel beat up. I feel beat the fuck up because I'm trying to manage everything and I'm trying to pay attention, but sometimes you can't pay attention for that whole 11 hours. And, you know, you eat shitty and then you're caffeinated as fuck. Here I am, I'm going to do my guitar tracks. All right, slam a 5-hour energy drink. You haven't eaten anything all day, but just do it, you know. And oh, the guitarist is a little bit tipsy when I specifically asked him not to drink during the session. Okay, your face is red. All right, buddy, well, go ahead and lay down those tracks. I can tell you're a little drunk. We're only paying $35 an hour, but go for it. That breaks down to about every 10 minutes, it's a $5. You know, it's a lot of money, $350 a day for 10 hours. And then you don't even know if it's even going to work. You know, like you've done demos, but then you never know. But it always comes together more than you thought it would. And I've learned to kind of suppress my really OCD music. Because, like, when it's not an option, it's a little better. You can suppress that OCD. And you know that, like, it doesn't have to be perfect. It's never going to be perfect anyway. You could spend that $350 on one song and feel just okay about it. Or you can spend it on three songs and feel okay about those. And maybe capture more of an energy, more of a raw feeling, more of a charm. You know, because a lot of my favorite bands are like kind of down home, home recorded, filled with mistakes, and I never held it against them. You know, I never ever held it against them. Black Keys, great example. Their first couple records, fucking awesome. But there's like, they're rough around the edges. You know, the White Stripes, same deal. Dead Moon, Pavement. Yeah, just because it's not totally pro and polished doesn't mean it can't be perfect in its own way. You know, Perfect Sound Forever, Perfect From Now On. Those are two great. Perfect Sound Forever. I think that's a Pavement movie. And Perfect From Now On is a Built to Spill record. And if you haven't checked out those bands, I would highly recommend you check out those bands. So, as soon as I get this stuff mastered, I'll have 7 songs mastered. But I haven't even done the lyrics on them yet. I definitely want to play some music for you guys because I keep talking about these projects I'm doing and see what you think. But aside from that, I've got some new gear. I bought a webcam, and it's not only going to be used when me and my girlfriend have sex to make a whole bunch of cash, but it'll be used for the podcast. My buddy Dave said I should do it, but I need to be consistent, right? And I got to figure out how to use it. But I did buy the camera, so I might have to buy a new computer to make sure it all runs. But I have the power and all that. But I would like to do it every week at a certain time and just put it out like that. Put out an audio like I've always done, but then also a video on YouTube. That's the way you do it. I mean, honestly, I think people who watch podcasts are kind of missing the point. They're just watching some dude talk. Kind of lazy, because to me, podcasts, as you guys know, were meant to like do something else, like drive your car. Like they're meant to do your daily activity while you're listening to a podcast. But hey, whatever, man. Apparently, Patrick Carney from the Black Keys watches Joe Rogan every single night, and that was a really decent podcast when they were on their latest. Like they were on like a week ago on Joe Rogan. Anyway, I'm out of saliva. I'm out of words. This is the Shit Show with Chabo. I love you all for listening. Tune in next week. I am going to try to put one out next week by Tuesday and fulfill my 54-episode contract with you, the public. And until then, fucking go do something fun. You know, go do something satisfying. Cook more meals. Drink more water. Maybe go out for a little run now and again. Don't spend as much money on bullshit. Certainly lay off the sugar. And I don't know. Go get laid. I'll talk to you guys soon. We will talk soon. All right. Bye.